Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And Ash Millman.
Hello, everyone.
Now, there are a few things that I love in this life than sci-fi, games and movies and Ting. And I want an excuse to talk about No Man's Sky, a game that I've always loved.
Yeah.
So,
I've heard that, actually.
Yeah.
You've always loved it.
Yeah, you go back through the archives, you'll find nothing but love, which sounds sarcastic, but it's not true. Although that bit is true, because I've always loved it. Anyway, they added a massive VR mode to it,
yes.
Which has been one of the reasons that a lot of people have been going back to it, because they obviously reduced the price. They kind of try to make a big old... second play for getting some people in. And a lot of the fandom has been referring to this as No Man's Sky 2. It sort of feels like the second life of the game because they added so many new animations and the way that the planets get generated and different mission structures and everything else. But yeah, in the sort of general vein of highlighting some overlooked or underrated games, obviously No Man's Sky's reputation speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And it was a complete mess in 2016.
Well, it's managed to be an overrated game that has managed to turn itself into an underrated game by the fact that it blew its wad too early and badly, mm-hmm. and it damaged its lot of its player base. It did, though. And now it's become that sort of it's almost cool to hate on No Man's Sky
a little bit,
and
yeah.
Now it's becoming that sort of niche sort of thing of hey man, this is a really decent game if you
go
back to it.
It's weird because the thing that I always loved about it, not in a weird jokey way, is that it was always a survival game. It was always this very craft heavy, you're very isolated in space and you're trying to find a way to get off a given planet, and then you slowly regain control and you get, you have a ship and you build different weapons and you become more comfortable being this sort of space exploration or space explorer kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I always loved that side of it, and now that they've put all the VR elements into it, obviously it's first person, but they've added a whole bunch of different ways that you can control it in VR, where you're pulling weapons out your backpack, you're flying a ship with both independent limbs or whatever.
That's cool.
You're pulling plants out the ground to craft. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And when you land on a new planet, you have to physically get a hold of your cockpit and open it to get out. And little things like that sort of add to that sort of isolated immersion, that really you're alone in space trying to make it work kind of thing. And if you want to be a space pirate, or you just want to go and get weird space pills from the bottom of the ocean, you can do all these different things, and all those playstyles are completely valid, and they have a whole base building thing. You can build a base in the side of a cave, or you can go build something in the sky, or you can live underwater.
It's a lot of effort.
They've done an absolute ton to it.
It sounds exhausting, honestly. Yeah. Kind of. This is VR as well, and every little thing needs a limb attached to it. Sounds honestly I'd be
tired.
Every
little thing. A lot of things.
I have to open my own doors,
To be honest, I get sweaty watching people play Beat Saber, doing all that. I'm just jeez.
I will mention, because I finally bought a PSVR, which is why I bought it for No Man's Sky. I dropped £300 to play this thing.
Right.
In total.
No Man's Sky?
How nice it must be to have disposable income.
Oh, we got paid to leave.
Mr. Moneybags,
I've got a house. Oh,
sorry, Josh Brown custom t-shirt, but still.
Hey, man, I didn't buy it. That was sent in.
I'd love it if you did. It was a custom flower-based Josh Brown design.
No, I'm not that sad.
That's not a waste of money. Let's be realistic. £300 on No Man's Sky VR or a Josh Brown t-shirt.
I mean, I'll take the No Man's Sky.
I know what I'd be buying.
I can build Josh Brown in No Man's Sky and fly around him. So it's fine. Don't worry about it. I can make his little face as a rock formation. But I feel like they've bulked it out in a whole bunch of different ways. But I think the thing to drill down on, which I'd love to do more stuff on at some point, is just that they have turned that game around.
Yeah.
And I always like the calm, it was always a chill sort of thing. I remember Sean Murray tweeting about it back in 2016, saying don't expect a mass multiplayer game, even though he told people that's what it was going to be. That it was always a chill exploration game, and that's totally what it nails. And you can play it that way, or you can go and get in a ship and dogfight and do all that kind of stuff as well. I do think that No Man's Sky is worth highlighting as something that, like you said, has gone from being overrated and anticipated to oh my god, to actually, no, it's a really it's a hell of an achievement considering the amount of the team size and everything.
It's a totally different game. What you're describing now is a totally different experience than what we got with the vanilla release.
But you can still do that if you want. If you just want to chill and just explore, you can
but
do
it,
that
but
too.
It just felt like there was no real end game. There's no real point to it. Even just like adding in the sort of additional, like being able to move things with the move controllers, that is adding in a layer of depth that just wasn't available at the beginning at all.
Yeah, and there's like mission boards and multiplayer stuff and different quests and whatever. And like one of the stupidest things that they've added, which, well, not stupidest, it makes the most sense, but it's the tiniest thing, is that NPCs now walk around, which was never there before.
So like,
just the stupidest, then you can sit on a chair now as well. So yeah, things like that. Jules, your first game to highlight was Vanquish.
Well, this is the thing. I love Vanquish so much. It is
Platinum games are so good.
It's one of the first games that I played from Platinum Games, because before I played when they were Clover Studios and they did, what was it, Futeful Joe, and they did a few other things as well. God Hand, I'm pretty sure they had a hand in as well.
I think that was them.
I think they had a hand in that. But it was when Vanquish came on that it really put them on the map for me. Mm-hmm. And like, I looked at the trailer and I was like, man, this cutscene looks great. And then I looked down the bottom and I was like, oh my God, that's actually in-game footage. This game looks amazing. I don't know if you guys have played it.
I love Vanquish.
Yeah, you've played it loads. Yeah. It is like, to try and sell it to you, Ash, and anyone else who's listening, it's like the best, worst sci-fi B-movie made into a video game.
Sold.
The concept is that there's a giant solar station that is being turned into a weapon that can literally irradiate everything around it.
So it's a Death Star.
Like a Death Star. And the pesky Russians have taken it over. And then as it goes on, it turns out that it's actually a military coup by the US themselves to try and basically up the economy by having their cities destroyed so that they can all band together.
I don't remember any of the story.
See, I do because I've done multiple videos on it. And you play as Sam Gideon. And literally he's got a button that allows him to smoke a cigarette, which is brilliant.
It's a gameplay feature because when you take cover, you can do this thing, you do the smoking thing, and when he flicks the cigarette out, and the enemies will shoot that instead, so you can be like, hey, look over there, and then you run away and shoot people instead.
Because we did this in a list, didn't
we? Did. It was the pointless yet awesome video game mechanics, and it was there's this one bit where they actually address it. They're just kind of like, hey, don't you think it's the wrong time for a cigarette? And he just goes like, say, like, nah, man, these are robots. They're attracted to like infrared or heat signal stuff. And he like flicks it, and so it's like, oh, it actually gives it a purpose. Mm-hmm. There we go.
I think the general movement as well, like obviously Gears of War had such a massive impact towards the end of the 2000s, and then Vanquish was just, what if we took like the stop and pop cover system and just gave you like a big boost thing, slow motion dives, cartwheels, all these different things, and like boss finishes. Like I remember that, I think it's the very first boss that you do that big punch flurry on and just uppercut his head straight off.
That finishing bit has you riding up its shoulders and then grabbing a missile that it's fired at you, spinning around it with such impact that you fire the missile back down the tube that it came from.
And
it blows it up from within, and you start
the fish tube,
and you literally just sit there just going like, I did that.
Oh. Like, the fish tube of its day.
So good.
Platinum as well, like, have obviously gone on to make a name for themselves with really ridiculous set pieces like that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Metal Gear Rising: Revengeance, and I'll totally mention Astral Chain, which the review for that's next week. You guys can come back and check that out. But I'm playing through that at the minute. That is another ridiculously brilliant Platinum game, and but I feel like they're just nailing it.
Is that I feel like it's an underrated game, because when it came out, a lot of people didn't really know what to make of it, because it was like this sci-fi Gears of War-esque thing that was very shallow, and it was definitely style over substance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just wrote it off, because I think that it was released in a window where a lot of people were kind of done.
Was it everybody was doing that cover system?
And you see on the back, if you flip over the back of the box art, all you'll see is basically him in covering positions. And if you were to look at that, you'd be like, ah, you know, there's not really anything new here. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you actually start playing that game, the fluidity with which you move is fantastic. Because, for example, when you finish a slide, if you're holding another button, he'll do a forward flip and it will instantly go into slow-mo, and you'll be able to shoot and then slide away again. Mm-hmm. But you can only use that slow-mo for a limited amount of time, and if you use it up, the core on his back becomes exposed and he's really slow, because he's like, oh God, this suit actually weighs a ton. Like, it's brilliant. They've done it really well. Mm-hmm. And graphically, it's amazing as well.
I think they added it to the Xbox One's backwards compatibility thing as well, so if anyone wants to just pick it up, it should be super cheap now.
It's also released on PC as well. There's loads of support for it as well. I'm pretty sure you can add in new mods. And you can add in graphical upgrade textures as well. Like, it looks phenomenal. And in fact, I might be getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure Keiji Inafune, the guy who was behind Resident Evil, had something to do with this game, and I'm pretty sure that he wanted...
You're not thinking of...
Shinji Mikami? Shinji Mikami. And he said that he wanted to have every single bullet that the enemies fire and you fire be animated on screen, and his team were like, that's impossible. Vanquish proves that it is not impossible.
When you put it in slow motion, yeah. you can see the whole fly.
There's a bit where a Gatling gun is firing and spraying across, and when you slow down, it's literally just shrapnel everywhere, and you're like, and if you get even touched by it, you're like, pew, pew, pew. Oh, it's so good.
What you like?
It's cool seeing how much like you love it as well, though, and how much passion you have for it. Yeah. Would you say it's got like the same sort of comedy as God Hand and those sort of games?
Oh,
as well?
there is a real sort of like cheesiness factor to it. Like there's some moments in it that are questionable, where it's just kind of like, I'm the tough military expert, but also I'm going to betray you, sucker. Like that, like you call it like as soon as you meet him.
I kind of put it with like Binary Domain as just this sort of completely overlooked thing because it had that stop and pop cover system, which like I said, everybody was so sick of back then. But because it was the end of like that era of mechanics being overused, you got the best examples at the end of it. That was when they mastered those things. Plus Vanquish kind of stands out as one of the only times that Platinum have done a third person shooter. Like nearly everything thereafter was like a top down isometric hack and slash thing, which is what Astral Chain is as well.
The only thing I'd say that is a criticism against it is that the ending of the game sets up a sequel that unfortunately never happened. Mm. And it's really like, it's a bad ending. You fight what you believe to be the final boss, and then at the very end he just goes, nah, actually these were just two drones and I'm actually in this spaceship that's been flying away for the last 3 hours. I'm not even here.
It's like the Mass Effect 2 ending, but they never got to do their final bit.
And it's just kind of like, okay, what was the point then? And I did a list on the sort of horrible repercussions of what would be, because you know when like games finish and it's like, hey guys, we saved the day. Ooh. Whereas in this one, you're just kind of like, but wait a minute, that means that the Russia thing's still a big thing. The guy's still alive. The president is dead at this point and all of the economy is in the drain and they're just like, we saved the day! As the world's like,
that kind of works even better though. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think they'll eventually do it because Platinum seem to have got like back in control of their games. Like they did weird spin-off stuff like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game and the Transformers game. And then,
War of Cybertron. Did they do that one?
No, there's
you were talking about the other one that's like cell shady one.
Yeah, it's called Something Destruction. But yeah, I feel like they did that and they did this whole company statement about getting back in control of their IPs and stuff. So I think we'll get Vanquish eventually, but maybe it'll just take a bit of time.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, Ash, your first game was Prey.
Prey 2016.
Yay! So I've not played this game, but between you and Josh, I feel like there is a huge love for this game that just went completely unappreciated.
I kind of bounced off it too, but carry on.
It's really good. I think considering how little attention it got, or what attention it did get, was maybe not like big love for it. Ben, Roy and Josh can explain this way better than me, but I will try and represent it for them. It's just a fantastic, like, tight sci-fi horror sort of game, and it's like it's this massive spaceship and there's all these aliens on there, little mimicky like strange tendril things,
little spiders. Ooh.
Yeah, and you've got to basically just go around and figure out what's going on, what you got to do and all that sort of thing. There's massive like gravity walk in space through things. There's all massive set pieces. It's just really weird and wonderful. It's like taking, it's like Bethesda's take on Alien Isolation, but
it's a Bethesda game, is it?
Is it Arcane?
Yeah, Bethesda paid the money. Yeah.
But it's Arcane's take on like what would be what did I just say?
On what, like a sci-fi
exploration
stuff. Yeah, there we go. On an Alien Isolation game, but spun their sort of way. It's done again. It's really good. It's just really interesting. It's just a great way of them doing it. It's really fun.
Because I didn't play all the way through it, but the thing that I love was that they had the mimics, which are those weird little spider things. Like one, when you first come across one of them, and it's quite small, it's a sort of inky little spider thing. Yeah. Like running around next to your feet, and you'll just catch it out of the corner of your eye. And it's that exact feeling when you see a spider in like your living room. You're like, oh god, it's in here with me.
They're grim.
So like you initially start chasing after it, but the really great thing, which is why I bounced off it, because I wanted them to do more of this, but I still think that it has this amazing atmosphere and it's still like worth highlighting, is you'll chase after these little spider mimic things into a room or whatever, and you'll go in and they'll have become like a coffee cup or a stool
whatever.
And then you won't know what it is.
Well, like Gary's mod sort of thing.
But like they can like impersonate stuff like the thing, but for like objects. So like you need to learn the layout of those areas, especially in the beginning, because if you go into a room and it's like, well, I know there was one coffee cup there before, now there's two.
You just get that other one.
I've bypassed this game. That sounds amazing.
It's brilliant. Like there's and like they have like mechanical stuff. They have like this glue gun that lets you sort of make your own like pathways to get up to levels and stuff.
It's kind of like BioShocky, like the way that it runs.
I know that's what we should have opened with.
To be fair, I say it's like Alien meets BioShock meets like an RPG. It's a real mishmash of genres and styles, but at its core, it's a horror game, and the way that it plays with horror is really special and fun.
So why did this not sort of get onto everyone's radar then?
Well, I think
that's a question for you. Like,
for me, me, like, I mean, there's two reasons it didn't succeed, like, in like, objectively or whatever. It's because Bethesda didn't market it very well. Like, they Bethesda continually dropped the ball on their
marketing. Was this the one... I actually vaguely remember us talking about this. Was this one of the slew of games that came out at a really bad time when it was, like, the Sent Out to Die squad?
Pretty much,
because
yeah.
they were like, basically, like, they were almost, like, quiet launch.
That and Dishonored, like, too. Like, I think, yeah, Bethesda, for me, like...
Titanfall 2.
Well, Titanfall 2 was in between Call of Duty and Battlefield. But for Prey and Dishonored 2, Bethesda just seemed to be like, well, the Bethesda name will sell this. And like, it doesn't. But yeah, in Prey's case, the reason that I bounced off it outside the... I mean, the marketing thing doesn't necessarily matter. The reason that I bounced off it gameplay-wise is I wanted them to do way more stuff with the mimics. Because I love that thing I just described
to you. Yeah, that just sounds amazing.
But then they give you a vision mode that just lets you see which one's the fake one.
And
so I didn't like that. But it's not that that gets in the way altogether. Like Ash said, Josh absolutely loves it. And I know that... I think Benji or Ben Roy's been
through
it too.
Ben Roy absolutely loves it as well.
Yeah, and it's like, and it does excel in story and atmosphere. And like, it is totally worth playing. The whole thing that they do at the beginning where you start out... I forget the name of the guy that you're playing as, but you're essentially like a lab rat, you're a science experiment, and you're being asked a bunch of questions as to, you know, like, can you understand these different puzzles and lateral thinking and everything else, but you don't know why. And there's, if you don't know, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but there's a great reveal at the beginning as to what's really going on around you, let's say.
Cool.
And that leads to, that then leads into the mimic stuff and everything else. So I think its first half is way stronger than the second half for me, meaning I didn't get there, but I have heard that it is all brilliant. It's just that I hated that vision mode stuff.
I fell off it and came back to it as well. I feel like it's one of those ones you start playing, you're like, wow, this is really cool, then you get used to it. It's also like, and then you kind of come off it again. But like, it's also, it's quite difficult to begin with because you're learning about these mimics. And there's a big, like, chaotic ones as well that are a bit more aggressive. So there's different enemy types and stuff. But like, there's loads of rooms that are set up to be very difficult to get through. And it's not particularly linear, so you have to go and find what you need, like come back with a key card or whatever, and then sort it all out, sort of things. So you got to go and find something, come back, maybe do another room later because
it can
it's
be a little
hard.
Bit of a
so,
right.
Yeah, so
you've got to figure it out, sort of thing.
So it's sort of like item collection is a bit archaic,
or
progression
a little bit. It's just, I mean, like the thing you were mentioning before, like alien isolation style, is that you have this one environment, this one space station, so you're forever, like, you know, overlapping and looping back on yourself to unlock something else and go forward and back, and then, you know, and then you'll remember, like, as you go forward, like, oh well, I couldn't get through this door. But maybe if I come back and do this later.
But I feel that I feel like that's good for horror games, because of the fact that when you come back through locations that you think you've cleared and there's a new enemy there or something's changed
cup wasn't there before.
Yeah, then that, I reckon that would work in this game's strengths. The best thing about learning about these titles now, because it's like, what, 2 years since it came
out?
Like, it's going to be cheap as chips now. I'll just be able to go pick it up.
And it's just like, yeah, and like Arcane, like obviously Dishonored 1 I absolutely adore, Dishonored 2 I bounced right off, but like they're such a good dev, like and Prey is a great thing. I think if you know that the hook throughout isn't the mimic stuff, that's more like an appetizer kind of thing. Whereas I went into it thinking that was going to be the whole game, and then when they were like, here's the vision mode and use the thermals and that one's the alien, and I was like, okay, you just broke the game that I love.
But that doesn't
override the whole thing.
Okay.
In terms of the combat as well, it's worth mentioning that it has the Alan Wake style thing of like, you want to weaken an enemy, it's either through melee or that,
like,
and then you finish them off.
I like that. It's the same thing,
like,
with
a two-part thing
with like Dead Space, like just shooting the weak spots is like weakening an enemy. I love those ideas of like, this is what you've got to do, like chip damage and real damage. It's why I like that game, and I can never remember what it's called. It's a JRPG where you talk about bevels and you run in triangles.
Bevels?
Nah, it'll come to me. Resonance of Fate.
Oh god, okay.
That's the exact same mechanic thing where you've got to do, somebody's got to do blue damage, and then when you do red damage, it does the blue damage to the enemy. If that makes sense.
Yeah, you're kind of like you're stacking it up. Like,
yes, it's weird. It's a weird way.
It's great. I mentioned that on Overlooked RPGs. Like, Resonance of Fate is brilliant.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
So the next game down that I've got is Observation, which I don't know anyone other than Benroy that's played it.
It's on my list. It's been on my list for ages. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this next and play it. And I'm like, oh, I'll just go and play this.
I put this in the games of the year so far, but I just think it's worth picking it apart more than just the 1 minute segment it had on the list kind of thing. Let's give it 5 minutes instead.
Go on then.
Because, so in Observation, you play as an AI. You're called Sam, SamOS. And you're basically on this space station. You're orbiting the Earth and you're looking after this doctor called Dr. Fisher. And the whole point of it is that you don't really know why you're there. That's the kind of the whole point. Is that you're just an AI. Like, what would an AI know other than just fulfilling tasks? And so you get asked by different members of the crew, like, you know, like, open this door, do this thing, open this vent, whatever, and you're sort of just helping out. And then I'm not going to give everything away, but there's a very pivotal thing that happens where you get contacted by something that definitely isn't human. And so you start, like, but obviously you can't really do anything about it because you're just an AI. So you might think as a player, like, well, what the hell is that? Yeah. But you can't tell anybody because you wouldn't have that, you wouldn't think of it that way.
And also you've probably not been programmed.
So you're forever, like, locked into being an AI. And so you can jump between different security cameras and keep an eye on the crew. And then things start affecting them as well in terms of their different psychosis. And
sign me up. That sounds amazing.
It looks gorgeous as well. I forget the name of the devs, but I think it's one of their first titles.
It's their first PS4 title. Mm. I can't remember the name of them either, annoyingly, but it's their first PS4 title. They've done previous ones on PC, and those have been really popular. Again, I can't remember any of the names of them.
If you ever check out the Observation developers, it feels like a real passion project. Like, they had a really good idea, a good vision for what it was going to be.
Is it a lengthy game?
No, it's. I think I did it in like 8 hours-ish. There's a bit towards...
No, it's not like only 8 hours.
It's not that long. Well, in a world of 300-hour Assassin's Creed.
In a world of Warhammer, mate, 8 hours is...
It might be a bit short. The thing is, one of the things that towards the back third of it is that it starts getting not bogged down, but it starts giving you a few too many fetch quests. Okay. Whereas, like, I mean, I know this whole podcast is going to be highlighting the positives of stuff.
But this is the thing. We're actually giving recommendations. Mm. Every single thing that we're talking about today is a recommendation to our listeners, and we should definitely make sure that they're aware.
That's one of the things towards the back third of it, where, like, you start being told, like, oh, you need to go over here and find this code that's on the wall, and because basically, like, you know, as I said, you're an AI, so you exist, like, in the ship itself, and also in the security cameras, and then eventually you get access to a little drone so you can fly around and stuff. And so, like, some of the puzzles, quote unquote, revolve around sending the drone to a certain part of the ship and finding something that was scrolled on the wall, and then reporting that back to someone else. Towards the back third, it starts to fall into that a little bit more, which kind of felt like padding. Because at that point, the story is absolutely brilliant, and you just want answers. Yeah. And so much has happened with this weird entity that's in touch with you, and you're like, what the hell is it? An alien? Is it, like,
I want to play this.
What
bad.
Is it?
It's
so good. I mean, I'm a sucker for any mystery thing if it's done well, like any, like, detective thriller or just anything where, like, you don't know the end of it. What's this?
Pricey? Is it a pricey game?
No, I think it was 15. like $14.
Damn, son. Well, I guess I know what I'm going to be downloading tonight.
It's great, though. And just like, yeah, it just looks gorgeous. And they've gone for like this really like old school. It's a bit like Alien Isolation in terms of the cameras are always flickering. You're sort of like, it's very VCR style.
Nice.
You know, everything's, you're struggling to sort of make sense of everything whilst you're being bombarded by all this other, these other signals. And I'll not give away one of the, even there's a great twist at the very beginning after you get contacted by this thing where you look out the side of the ship and that's the twist. I'll just leave it there.
Okay.
And that's a great thing too.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
I think the thing is, like, I want to describe how brilliant it is, but I don't want to ever ruin any of the mysteries.
Fair enough.
Because they're doled out so well. And it ends in a way that is kind of divisive, but I loved it. And I think if you like Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, it's similar thematically to that. And in terms of how much you just need to go with it. But yeah, so mine would be Observation. Jules, your second thing was Warhammer 40K Space Marine.
Now this is
the total opposite of the
right. Now listen, if you think that was in any way subtle or anything like that, like 40K Space Marine is literally a big boot to the face and a chainsaw to the heart. Because honestly, like they're just, it's the biggest, dumbest fun I've had in a long, long time. And you guys well know I'm very in deep to my Warhammer. Shout out to my boy Slanesh. Yeah, there he is. And also, if you want to check out more board game stuff, you can go to Live and Let's Dice. We've got a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It's all right, guys. We're supported by them now, so it's okay. So, this is the thing. Loving 40K definitely helps, but you don't need to understand it to understand what's going on.
Because is this the shooter one?
Yes.
Right.
It's basically Gears of War with a Warhammer skin. And I have got no problem with that because they actually, that's what they're meant to be. When they were designing the Gears of War characters, Blazinski and all of his pals, like literally said they were basing them on Space Marines. Yeah. The toughest,
like
most
the original
mad.
Bulky stuff, yeah.
They're like the maddest men of the galaxy. Uh-huh. And to have them going up against literally like dozens and dozens of big slavering orcs who just want to go, all right, mate. Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's literally going up against like football hooligans and you're just slaying them down. And there's like a sense of catharsis in that game that is unparalleled.
What does it do? Because I remember when the demo came out for it, I didn't play the full one, but I played the demo for it. Like, what else do you get like access to and stuff? Like, because I remember the shooting stuff and that was about it.
That's the thing. Like, there is very, very little depth to this game. Right. It is like, move here, shoot that, move there again, shoot that, get some lore. Like, I wouldn't say that this is a game that requires much sort of like lateral thinking or puzzle solving, but sometimes games don't need to be like that to be enjoyable. As a weekend blast, this game does everything it sets out to be, which is a sense of empowerment that is unlike no other. Because when you go and see somebody stomp somebody's skull into pieces and they're like 8 foot tall and like having bullets ricochet off them because they don't do any damage because it's just crude weaponry and you're the savior of mankind, you're just like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's like the original 2016 Doom, and just being like, just, it sounds like a team of Doom Slayers just being like unstoppable.
And then you've got like corruption with like the force of chaos coming in and possessing some of the minds of your team and stuff. That's what starts out as a group, and then you're basically getting whittled down one by one. It's a desperate case of survival, and then eventually you come out at the end, and you're like, ugh. It's like an action movie that you are fully in control of.
How do they even get hit if they're that impenetrable?
I mean, it's the same as any video game logic. Right. I mean, you gotta
like enough bullets. I mean,
to be honest, there are some questionable moments, such as the Space Marine's armor is meant to be like made of this thing called ceramite, and it's meant to be the toughest material that they can make.
Okay.
So why would you take your helmet off? And they always do. They're always just like, ksh, and it's kind of, I've got to talk now, and it's just kind of like.
Does anyone get shot like Carmine style?
There are a few times when people get off, and you're just kind of like, God, why has that happened? But if you want any other reason to play it, it's the voice acting. You've got your stock sort of like very stoic, like, I am the savior of mankind for Tiberius, like that. It's like very silly over the top. And on the other side, you've got orcs that are literally East End gangsters.
Good.
And they're like, we'll rip your head off, mate.
It's like, they're not all Scottish. Because like,
unfortunately, they're not Scottish in this one, but they are.
Like,
they're Cockney gangsters. It's like, the boys, get the boys.
Is it on M360?
I think it... Yeah, it was on 360. Okay. It was on 360 and... I can't remember what other one it was on. It must have been on PS2.
Yeah, like PS3 or something. I remember when that first
came out. No, you're right. It's PS3 and Xbox 360. No,
right.
That's one of them.
I'm trying to think of like ways to play it today. I don't think it's on Xbox's backwards compat list.
You can get it on PC, I think. Yeah. I'm not sure on that one because it has been a long time since I played it. But
as three big sci-fi nerds, like, I'm not into Warhammer anyway. I don't even know what Warhammer is. What is a Warhammer?
Right.
Is it a hammer? I don't know.
It's a hammer that's used for war.
I assume it was.
40,000
Right.
Of them.
honest to Christ, Warhammer lore is the most convoluted convoluted and complex thing. There's a thing called there's a thing called the Black Library, which is literally all of the books that go alongside the main two games, as you'd say, Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40K.
Okay.
And there are so many books. Right. Like, you can have stories that go from one that barely even do like 2 years of story in like a in like 50 millennia. Is my brain.
I was gonna say, would you still recommend getting it? Did you bounce off it when you tried to get into it?
40K, not my thing. Okay. I don't mind the board game stuff. Like, I enjoy the little physical things, but as a gaming thing, I'd rather play Gears.
Because I'm like, as a big sci-fi nerd, should I? Is it just passing me by? Like, should I go outside just that game?
It's. I feel like if you were to play, because there are quite a few decent Warhammer games, and there's a new one coming out soon, which is Warhammer Underworlds, the game that Ash and I played in real life, but is now being turned into a board game. And I really recommend keeping your eye out on that, because that is literally the board game online. But in terms of which games to play them, 40K is a great entry point because it doesn't require any knowledge. You've got the Ultramarines, which are the good guys. You've got the Orcs and Chaos, which are the bad guys. You don't really need to know why this is happening, apart from the fact that there's only war. There only ever has been
There's only ever war. It sounds good. Ash, your last game was Beyond Good and Evil.
It was one that we have probably all played. And one that's come back recently because Beyond Good and Evil 2 has been announced. So everyone's gone, oh my God, I remember that this exists. Yep.
That was a one?
Yeah. No, see, you mentioned it when we were talking, like, brainstorming ideas for it. And I thought that it was one that wasn't underrated because everyone knew it. But, like, originally, it was one of the ones that was on the top of everyone's underrated
list. Oh, totally, man.
Yeah.
Like, because it's always one that you bring up, like, oh, yeah, I missed that. But, yeah, about you've got Uncle Paige the pig and Jade the photojournalist. And you've got to go around space taking pictures of weird blobby squid in the sky, and there's a whole government conspiracy that you've got to uncover, and you've got to do it by, you know, racing cars and doing loads of fun stuff.
Go to the Mama Go garage. Yeah.
Now, I'm not gonna lie, this is the one reason why I let this game pass me by for so long, is because it's the same reason why a lot of people didn't really understand what it was. It was like, it was like a racing game, stealth game, third-person platformer game.
It's
like, it's, and that's the thing. It's when you hear all of that stuff, it's almost overwhelming to the point where you go, it's got to be bad then, because they're trying too many things.
It's
but,
a PS2 gem.
But then when you actually play it, you're just like, damn, they've managed to blend and these styles
that is
so well.
I keep mentioning Xbox backwards compatibility because that service is way more reliable and robust than the PlayStation Now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Beyond Good and Evil is on PlayStation Now, but it is on
Game Pass.
It's been remastered, so...
Yeah, the HD one
should,
is.
It should be on... Mm-hmm. I think it's on PlayStation.
I assume so. But like, even if you picked it up now, like obviously, like it came out in like 2003 or 2004. Like obviously, it's a bit old school kind of thing in terms of the way that it plays. But for me, that just only gives it more charm.
Yeah.
Like, I love the platforming elements. It totally is aping Ocarina of Time in terms of the control scheme, the way the HUD's laid out and everything. And you have little things like little vehicle sections and stealth sections. Like, it's weird because its variety is the thing that was initially confusing.
Yes.
But that's totally why you should pick it up now. Like, it will just kind of take you by surprise.
It's because of the fact that I've heard from so many people that it actually has a surprising amount of depth through the variety. Because a lot of people just go, oh, if you chuck in like a racing section, if you chuck in like a combat system or whatever, then you're basically diluting what your main appeal is. Mm. But here it just seems like every single stitch has been meticulously
woven. It's
weird.
It reminds me of an old game on PS2, which, like, no, anyone played called like Hexen.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I and think, it's like back it's then there were a lot of companies just going, like, this is going to be the next big franchise, and then like Ubisoft was Beyond Good and Evil. I forget who did Hexen. Ironically, as I've just mentioned it, but
Drakengard.
Yeah, I don't know, but like that whole thing of like trying to do a whole brand new franchise, I feel like they put like a lot of, you know, a strong foot forward with Beyond Good and Evil, but either because it was Ubisoft at the time that it released or whatever, they couldn't get it across that well. And we might as well talk about Beyond Good and Evil 2 as well, because what they've shown for that so far, it seems completely different. Like it's more like a No Man's Sky.
Well,
it's almost like a No Man's Sky.
That's your favorite game. You've never said a bad word about it.
3 years to now.
I am going to be devil's advocate and say that I'm actually a little bit worried about Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Have you played the first one?
I have played the first one, and I look at the second one and I think everything that was so innovative and was so like stitched together so well here makes me worry, is that going to be the case in this one? Because I looked at it and I was like, is this just not another open world game? Is this not just like Jack 2?
Jack 2 is one of the best open world games ever!
I'm not saying I'm not impressed by it. I'm not saying that it's not the case. I'm just worried that it won't fit as well, because it will seem like it's copying trends rather than setting them.
I don't know. I think with Beyond Good and Evil, the original game, the world and the lore was so interesting and in depth and strange and weird and innovative, that making that bigger and being able to explore it further in an age where we have all these technological advances to make it possible in an interesting way, I think is only a good thing. And I'd be really interested in seeing what they do with that, like, and spreading it and making it bigger and more involving and that sort of thing as
it's
well.
It's weird because I forget the name of the dude that's the creative director. It's the
it's Patrice.
Is it Patrice Dessler?
We don't have any names on this pod. All
we've
been like,
nailed Shinji Mikami before. But whoever that dude is, the creative director, apparently he was sitting at home when they first announced that Beyond Good and Evil 2 was going to be done. They announced the logo and I think they had like a couple of concept sketches. They did a live stream, but all they had was like a sketch of the new monkey or whatever it was. And he was saying that they were at day zero of development. They literally had a couple of sketches and that was it. And so it was like, already it's way too early. We're getting told about it way too early as a populist kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then when they finally debuted the gameplay, it was like they had the whatever that monkey's called, Space Monkey. That's called the Space Monkey program. But Space Monkey flying around that ship, and it was like, okay, it's kind of. And they've made references to No Man's Sky. They said that they want to do like a million different planets. Yeah. Yeah. Same thing that Mass Effect Andromeda was initially going for. But that like just feels like we're just trying a bunch of kind of pop culture-y things that people can latch onto.
Yeah, and that's what worries me, because if you start following the trends and giving people what they're expecting, then that's going to be its downfall, because it won't. You don't become timeless if you're just replicating something. And yes, don't get me wrong, I know what you're going to say, you can have games that do that and they do exceptionally well.
But you could it could be playing up to all our expectations at the moment, because like you say, it's very early on. You'd release all this stuff that looks standard and to the letter and all that sort of thing, and then just widen off and do something different when it actually comes out and gets closer to actual release.
I think that Beyond Good and Evil's biggest strength is its storytelling, and I think that the more you add in millions of worlds and so many other facets to do, you dilute that experience, because it's the same. It's the Fallout problem, or the Skyrim problem. Here's the main quest, but as soon as you get out the door, it's like a million things bombard you at once, and you lose that impactfulness. Witcher 3 is probably one of the only open world games that manages to get you hooked on the story.
I think Skyrim does that well.
And why can't Beyond Good and Evil do that as well for us?
I'm just holding myself at a little bit of distance.
I'm ready to throw myself in. I'm like, I want to see the world.
Another thing that stands out with Beyond Good and Evil is that that IP was just dead. It was, a lot of people would recommend the first game, and that was just kind of it was a point in time. I mean, it was 17 years ago. When Beyond Good and Evil 2 got announced, that was when Ubisoft were in the middle of being taken over by Vivendi.
Yes.
And I think that they resurrected a bunch of IPs and went, look, we've got fans, we've got fan bases, we've got interest in this, like, look how much search terms there are, look at this. And they kicked off Beyond Good and Evil 2 as a way to stave off the hostile takeover, which they've now survived. And so now that Ubisoft are backed it as being Ubisoft, it's like, okay, well, this game will come eventually, and they'll put in and then the longer the development goes on, the more that it needs to have quote unquote loot boxes and open world elements and things that are going to guarantee sales. It'll be the opposite of what the first game was.
Have you guys ever heard of a game that has come out of development after years and years and years and all the sort of production issues that it's had and been good? Duke Nukem Forever is all I'll say.
There's got to be something.
And I'd say that there have been some games that have taken like years to make. Super Mario Odyssey took like 3 years to make or whatever it was, or Super Mario 64 took like 5 years to make. That's fine.
God of War reboot. That took 5 years. That's ages.
Cyberpunk 2077 has been in development since 2012.
And that's going to be good.
And that's already good.
Yeah, okay. So
whatever. But it is true, obviously. That's the thing. The longer that you take in video games especially, the more you need to recoup the budget on the other end.
I mean, I'm paranoid about Psychonauts 2. Like that's meant to be launching this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was something was meant to be launching this year, and we haven't heard anything about it.
They do so many different things, and they opened up such a massive publisher wing of themselves that they've not like focused on as much of an output as they had in the 2000s.
All I'll say is that I've seen the new game that they're putting out, Rad. And I am less than impressed.
Rad apparently isn't very.
It's
rad.
Not rad.
It's too obvious.
You could have said it is rad in that it's radiation sickness.
Good. Yes. Rads.
That one was definitely.
That definitely
a joke.
Worked better. at least we ended on another sci-fi game though, which brings it all full circle.
There we go.
Let us know what we think down in the comments below about your own favorite of overlooked, underrated, underlooked, overrated, overlooked,
overbaked
sci-fi games. Or you can come find us on social media as well. For now though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Jules Gill.
Also check out Catastronauts. It's very funny. It's like Overcooked but in space.
Interesting. Also by Josh Millman.
My other one was, it would have been Lost Planet. Remember that? Yeah. There we go. Chuck
it all in the pot.
Don't think I have another one. I will say Katana Zero.
Ooh, very good game.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.